Greetings once again from Denver, Colorado, the city right here in the middle of it all. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. Welcome back to the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Going out again worldwide to a worldwide audience, unconstrained by the traditional bounds of the broadcast media. Glad to have you back on the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do take the events of the week and focus them through the lens of original thought. As we come to you this week, it's Sunday afternoon here in Denver, and we got a real good taste of fall yesterday. It's getting chilly out here, and we just got back from church not too long ago. We go to Denver Bible Church here in Denver. And the sermon today was all about miracles. And so if you want a better understanding of miracles, what they do, what they don't do, whether or not they're happening now, whether or not what they're for, in a half hour or so, order the sermon from Denver Bible Church for September 13th, 2009. It will educate you, it will enlighten you, and for some of you charismatics out there, it might depress you a little bit, but you'll get over it because you'll be so much wiser. Just a lot of good stuff. It was really, really, really fun day at church today, so we're feeling good here. But let's go to the news, I suppose. Do we want to go to the news? Yeah, all right. We're going to go to the news because that's what the show is about. It's taking the events of the week and focusing them through the lens of original thought being the Scripture, the Word of God, the Bible, the biblical worldview. That's what we're all about here. And I'm going to start with a story that I have avoided, frankly. And maybe I'll get into why, maybe not, I don't know. And I might offend some of my listeners out there. A story off of WorldNet Daily that I pulled down yesterday. A California judge has tentatively scheduled a trial for January 26, 2010 for a case that challenges Barack Obama's eligibility to be president based on questions over his qualifications under the requirements of the Constitution. That's right. It is the birth certificate case. And I, to be honest with you, I haven't been following this all that much because I figure that Barry Ho is from Chicago. And one of the easiest things for a Chicago mobster slash politician to do is going to be to fake a birth certificate. So I haven't paid much attention to it, but this made big stirrings in the conservative community this past week, so I wanted to address it. Apparently, if this case goes to arguments before U.S. District Judge David Carter, it'll be the first time the merits of the dispute have been argued in open court. Several motions were heard, apparently, very recently. They've been heard, including a resolution to longstanding questions about whether attorney Orly Tates properly served notice on defendants, which the judge says she had. I guess that's a big deal. Orly Tates, that's a female person. Have you ever heard of anyone named Orly before? O-R-L-Y. Look, I'm sitting here asking Takako if Orly sounds like an odd name. That's a tough one, huh? It's got an R and an L. Orly. My wife, by the way, is from Okinawa, Japan. English was not her first language. And what was the store we used to shop at out in California when we first moved out here that you couldn't pronounce?
Thrifty.
Thrifty drugstore. You want to have fun, have a Japanese person try to pronounce the word thrifty when they first get off the boat. It's a laugh riot. But anyway, Orly Tates, and we're not making fun of Orly's name. I'm sure she's a fine person. We're just having a little bit of fun here. Anyway, so the judge has heard some motions, and I'm not big on legal argumentation ramblings and all that happens in the courts. It just seems like such a joke to me. So he ruled that Orly properly served the defendants, which are apparently people in the Obama administration, maybe even Barry Ho himself and his MO, quite possibly. In a second ruling, Judge Carter ordered that attorney Gary Creep can be added to the case. So we're going to bring a creep on board, which is always good when you're going to court. The vice presidential candidate. Oh, he was the vice presidential candidate for the American Independent Party. And apparently the party's chairman was also restored to the case. Good news, I suppose. Let's see. But the judge did not immediately rule on Tate's motion to be granted discovery. Now, you know, that's the right to see the president's birth certificate, right? And other records, I suppose. Nor did the judge rule immediately on a motion to dismiss the case that the government has submitted. Judge Carter has ordered a hearing for October 5th on the motion to dismiss, and he's ordered that arguments be submitted on the issue of discovery at that time. So, what we've got here, we've got a tentatively scheduled trial if the case goes to arguments. We've got a hearing on October 5th in which the whole thing could be dismissed. WorldNet Daily says, if the case survives this upcoming challenge, a pre-trial hearing has been scheduled for January 11th. All I want to say to my conservative friends out there who want to see Mr. Obama's birth certificate, I want to see it too. I mean, I'd like to know where the guy was born. Frankly, when I hear him speak, I think he was born on Mars. I can't relate to this cat at all. So the good chance that he was born, I mean, Nigeria would seem too close. No, was it Kenya? Kenya would seem too close to America for this bizarre alien type life form to have come from. And I'm speaking there about Barry Ho. I agree that this is fun, and it's an opportunistic attack on a very evil person. Frankly, anything that could get him out of office, I'm for that. But just be careful, because if you put your eggs in this basket, the birth certificate basket, I'm afraid they may end up on your face. That's just my warning, and that's why I don't give much credence to the opportunity for us, the conservatives, the Americans, to oust Barry Ho, the communist insurgent from some other planet, based on his birth certificate. Because I think if he was born in Kenya, I really don't think the liberals care. I don't think anyone cares. And I think that he'll be able to produce some kind of phony baloney birth certificate. Or he'll probably never have to do it at all. Anyway, it's very depressing. Don't get me wrong. But let me ask you this. If Alan Keyes had won the election and he was doing everything we wanted him to do, if he had overturned Roe v. or if he had put a conservative on the Supreme Court, if he had backed a national personhood measure to stop the killing of unborn children, if he had moved to execute all the criminals on death row and to reinstitute justice in the country, if he had begun to practice some sort of fiscal sanity, and it came out that maybe Alan Keyes was born in Toronto, would any of us care? So it's just not a moral issue, and I don't know. I'm moving on from that story. That's from the politics file. But I wish the best to everyone involved in the case, and I hope that indeed we're able to embarrass him or maybe even oust him from office. I would like to be wrong. I would like to see this come to some fruition, but I have very, very little hope that it will do so. All right, now let's move into serious news from the Domestic Tranquility File. Activist Jim Poulian was shot and killed Friday while protesting outside Owosso High School in Michigan. He was holding a graphic picture of an aborted child. He had been at the high school all week. Authorities say the suspect, Harlan James Drake, was offended by anti-abortion material that Jim was holding, that he was displaying in front of the high school. Let's see, this story from CNN. Poulian, whose anti-abortion activity was well known in the area, was protesting across the street from Owosso High School about 7:20 a.m. Last Friday when he was killed by several shots fired from a passing vehicle. You all know the story. What I want to get to here, I had an interesting conversation with some pro-lifers that I've, friends of mine, who have gone from Colorado. They've basically learned some things from our people out here, some of our people transplanted to another state that I won't identify. But they've begun to protest abortion, protest the killing of innocent children, to be more specific. And a number of them are concealed carry guys. And they got arrested a little while back, and a couple of them, including their leader, had guns on them. So when the police arrested them for being too loud and obnoxious and basically offending the people who murder children, they were arrested, duly arrested. They told the police, hey, I have a concealed carry permit and I have a weapon right here. You'll want to remove that. So the weapon was removed and, you know, they were taken off to jail. But there was a debate amongst pro-life advocates about whether or not concealed carry type guys should conceal, should carry their concealed weapons to anti-abortion protests. And my thought on the matter was, I personally do not carry a weapon, but I'm certainly not going to be dogmatic and tell anyone that they shouldn't. But it could work against you because, you know, the presence of guns these days freaks everybody out, especially in the suburbs and in the city. People are just scared of guns. It's you know, they're like little girls or something. But, you know, I told them I don't do it myself. I hadn't ever really thought about why I don't. But, you know, if you want to, you know, go ahead. It's a free country. You have the right to do it. But it could be used against you. It could give your enemies the ability to restrict your activities. And so now that this has occurred and Jim has been shot dead for, I mean, not even at an abortion clinic, not even confronting people, but standing out in front of a high school. I mean, I think we have to think about bulletproof vests more than concealed weapons, for crying out loud. Because even if Jim had had a concealed weapon, there's no way he could have defended himself against this psycho. Anyway, a fine man lost. But can you imagine that you're standing on the earth and you're advocating for the life of innocent people who are being murdered under color of law in your country? You're standing up for the truth and the gospel. And the next moment, you're standing in front of Jesus Christ. Can you imagine what, I mean, Jim must have been, I mean, it must have been pretty cool for Jim, except for the getting shot part. I'm sure that was not cool. But as far as how he's doing today, I think Jim Poulian is doing quite well today. I know his family is sad, but for a fellow like Jim, you know, we're all going to die. And, you know, for Jim, he got to die doing exactly what he loved doing, what he wanted to do, what he felt compelled to do by his faith in Jesus Christ. And he got to meet Jesus Christ after, as soon as he dropped the sign from his cold, dead fingers, he was standing in front of Jesus Christ to be judged. And I think he heard the words, "Well done, my good and faithful servant." All right, now let's move on into the war file. Got a lot of news this week. I don't know if I'll get through it all, but most of it I really just don't care about because, you know, there are bigger things happening. But I want to tell you what I think so that you can form a better opinion about the events of the day. This is a story from the Telegraph over in London. A dirtbag reporter named Stephen Farrell. Now, I say a dirtbag reporter because I have no idea who this guy is, but he's a reporter and he works for the New York Times, so I assume he's a flaming leftist, liberal, communist, dirtbag, piece of filth scum. Now, that's just an assumption I make. I could be wrong, but I would bet money that I'm not. Anyway, this reporter from the New York Times was rescued in an airborne operation. Him and his Afghan interpreter were kidnapped. And they were rescued by military operation this past week. Mr. Farrell and his interpreter, they were kidnapped last Saturday after they had traveled to the site of a U.S. airstrike on fuel tankers in the northern province of Kunduz. That airstrike had killed 75 people. So no doubt, Stephen Farrell, piece of garbage, commie leftist scum, was no doubt looking for dead civilians that American missiles or NATO missiles or basically looking for civilians that we had killed so he could put that in the New York Times report. And he gets himself kidnapped. While he was interviewing Afghans near the site of the bombing, an elderly man warned him to leave because he said the Taliban is on their way. Well, Mr. Farrell hadn't found enough dead civilians yet, and so he stuck around, and he got kidnapped, him and his interpreter. So what happened? A dramatic rescue operation came in the early hours of this Wednesday past when a troop of Special Boat Service Commandos, supported by a company from the Special Forces Support Group, left an American base in U.S. helicopters, and they rescued this piece of garbage. A young British soldier died in the battle, and his commanders are pretty upset. One senior Army source said, British Army, he said, when you look at the number of warnings this person had, that's Stephen Farrell, reporter for the New York Times, when you look at the number of warnings this person had, it makes you really wonder whether he was worth rescuing, whether it was worth the cost of a soldier's life. In the future, special forces might think twice in a similar situation, and I certainly hope they would. New York Times reporter, for crying out loud. They should be used as range finders, in my opinion, by the artillery. And I just mean that rhetorically, of course, not literally, I suppose. Just a creepy story that makes me sick, New York Times reporter. All right. And we'll, should we go to the break? Should we jump into the domestic tranquility file? We'll jump into the domestic tranquility file quickly. Authorities, so this is from Dover, Kansas, the Associated Press. Authorities say Jesse Dennis Dimmick led them on a car chase that ended in Dover, Kansas, where Jesse fled from his car. He went into a couple's home and held them captive for hours. Authorities have been looking for Dimmick because he's wanted in connection with a homicide in Aurora, Colorado, which is very close to where I live and is the center of the breakdown of domestic tranquility in Colorado, is Aurora, Colorado. Authorities say that Dimmick held two newlyweds hostage in their Kansas home, but he fell asleep and the couple escaped unharmed. Topeka Police Captain Jerry Stanley said that authorities, after the two newlyweds escaped, the snoozing criminal, authorities stormed the house. The suspect was shot, but unfortunately, his injuries were not life-threatening. Worldview, and I am Doug McBurney, your host, here from high atop the nation out here in Denver, Colorado. We'll go back into the domestic tranquility file, try to move through it quickly and get to something in the justice file. Dateline Los Angeles, California, from the AP, a mother accused of fatally slashing her two daughters' throats inside their Los Angeles home has been charged with two counts of murder. Antonia Gomez was also charged with special circumstances of multiple murders, making her eligible for the death penalty if convicted. Prosecutors say that Gomez stabbed her 11-year-old daughter Edith and her 17-year-old daughter Diana on September 2nd before cutting her own arms. Relatives told the LA Times that the 37-year-old mother had recently lost her job, could not make mortgage payments on her house, and had been hospitalized for stress. You know, this story, even in a city the size of Los Angeles, this story should rock the nation with horror and disbelief. Should be front page news across the country. But it's not. Because this type of thing happens every day, dozens of times a day, if you take the nation as a whole. A dozen times a day, a family is slaughtered, shot, stabbed, brutally killed by their own family members, who then either kill themselves or attempt to kill themselves. And this is the state of domestic tranquility, both in the nation and in the home. And I wonder, how callous are we becoming as we witness these horrific crimes day in and day out? What is this doing to our souls individually to see this every day? It's just a tragedy. And something has to give, ladies and gentlemen. Our nation cannot continue slaughtering itself at this rate and continue to be a great nation. It cannot happen. We are reaching the end. We are reaching the limit. And that's a warning I send out, that if this government does not get crime under control, if the church does not reach out and teach people the truth about their Creator, if we continue to give over our people and our children and our schools to the deviants who warp people's minds, this nation will fall in my lifetime. It simply cannot continue at this pace. I'm sorry. Dateline Woodburn, Oregon, from the Justice File. Prosecutors say they'll seek the death penalty for a father and son accused of bombing a Northwest Oregon bank and killing two police officers. 58-year-old Bruce Alden Turnage and his 32-year-old son Joshua face charges of first-degree murder. Judge Thomas Hart says that the Turnage's trial likely will start in September of 2010 because scheduling conflicts prevent it from starting earlier in the year. September of 2010. So these two guys blow up a bank, kill a police officer, injure a bank employee. They can't even put them on trial for a year. Why? Because there's so many cases of people killing each other that the courts are simply clogged and full. So justice delayed is justice denied. Have you ever heard that old cliche? Well, it's not a cliche. It's true. Justice delayed is justice denied, and we can't help but delay justice anymore because we just don't have room in the courts because we're tolerant of murderers and kidnappers and rapists. Into the justice file, we go deeper. Dateline Richmond, Virginia, from the Associated Press. Virginia is seeking a November 9th execution for John Allen Mohammed, mastermind of the deadly 2002 sniper attacks in the Washington, D.C. area. You remember this, right? John Allen Mohammed and his teenage accomplice driving through Virginia and Washington, D.C. area, shooting and killing people, terrorizing the area. Do you remember this? 2002, ladies and gentlemen, 7 years have passed. So the terror and the fear and the anger against this particular person, John Allen Mohammed, the outrage, the fear, the terror, it's all dissipated. And justice has been denied because justice has been delayed. But they are going to seek a November 9th execution. Why they have to wait so long, I do not know. Certainly, the death chamber is not overcrowded. That's for sure. It's not in use. It's pretty much empty. They probably have to clear out the cobwebs out of the thing. Mohammed, according to the AP, was sentenced to death for the slaying of one person out of the 10 that he shot to death during the 2002 rampage. He was sentenced to death for the slaying of one Dean Myers, whose name we can't even remember because it's been 7 years since this happened. Mohammed's attorney says they'll appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court, so don't even get your hopes up for a November 9th execution. It's just disgusting. It's just disgusting. It makes me want to secede and form a new union, because this is all just, it's to the point of just being ridiculous. All right. Let's try to get to some news that's not so disturbing, okay? Because it's all not over yet, right? Not yet. From the politics file, from the Associated Press, Dateline Washington, Vice President Jumpin' Joe Biden says a Republican congressman's outburst during the President Barry Ho's health care speech last Wednesday night, quote, demeaned the institution, unquote. That's what's so funny. Jumpin' Joe Biden. Anyway, so Joe Biden says that Joe Wilson demeaned the institution. You know, no one could demean an institution to which Joe Biden is a member. It can't be done. That institution has already been debased to its lowest level. For crying out loud, Joe Biden is a member of it. can't be demeaned. South Carolina Representative Joe Wilson shouted, "You lie!" after Obama said extending health care to all Americans would not mean ensuring illegal immigrants, which was a bald-faced lie, which tells us that we're living, it's as if we're living in a novel, like 1984. When the president speaks a bald-faced lie and someone calls him a liar, and that person is considered a freak and has to be chastised and ostracized, well, folks, we've crossed the line. We are living in Eurasia. Wasn't that the name of the country there in 1984? Anyway, we're there, folks. It's 1984. And you know what really offends me about this whole thing? I listened to this speech on the radio. I didn't watch it on television. I listened to it on the radio. Obama spews this bald-faced lie about illegal immigrants, and there is a ruckus in the House. I mean, you could hear people. It sounded almost like Prime Minister's questions there for a minute. There was a lot of angry discontent that was being voiced by everyone on the Republican side of the aisle. I'm sure I could hear it. And then when he reiterated that not one dime will be spent, then you heard Mr. Wilson say, "You lie!" Well, after everything calmed down, Obama picked right up because he was describing what he claims are distortions about his health care policy. And he said that not one dime would be spent on abortion. And you could have heard a pin drop in the House of Representatives. Not a single Republican had the nerve to say, "You lie, you murderer." Well, okay, maybe we couldn't expect anyone to shout out that this guy's a murderer. But no one on the Republican side had the guts to say that he was lying about abortion as well. I mean, Mr. Representative Joe Wilson had already broken the ice. For crying out loud, that speech should have ended with like a Taiwan-style fist fight going on with the amount of lies that Barack Obama was allowed to get away with. The Republicans should have been throwing chairs for crying out loud. Anyway, you know what? It was almost like watching Leonid Brezhnev address the Supreme Soviet, you know, but without the levity and charm of Brezhnev, you know, and of course without the threat of the gulags in the background. It was just bizarre. It's as if we're living in the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union fell and it recapitulated here on our shores somehow. It's just bizarre. Let's see here. Now, let's see. Wilson's behavior, according to the Associated Press, caused a political hangover for him and possibly for the Republican critics Obama had cast as shrill and more interested in killing any health care overhaul than finding a way to provide health care for everyone. Well, I say, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with just wanting to kill a bad idea? Even if you don't have a great idea, if you see a bad idea that's going to destroy the country, what's wrong with just wanting to kill that? Let's just hold the line, for crying out loud. Anyway. And of course, Representative Wilson had the nerve to speak up when it came to illegal aliens, but when it came to the killing of innocent people, being sanctioned by the United States government, even funded by the United States government, Mr. Wilson nor any of his Republican comrades had a word to say. And then Wilson apologized. He said, "I let my emotions get the best of me." You know, I'm sure that the Republican leadership had torches and pitchforks going up to Joe Wilson's office within minutes of the end of that speech. And they were ready to burn him at the stake. Because the Republicans are completely spineless at this point. It's just unbelievable. Now, let's see. Isn't there a related story here? Oh, yeah, here we go. This is great. From ABC News, the House of Representatives will vote this week on a resolution of disapproval condemning Representative Joe Wilson's outburst during President Barry Ho's address on Wednesday. Unless Wilson formally apologizes on the House floor. That's what Speaker Nancy Pelosi is demanding. She wants him on his knees in front of her, apologizing to Barry Ho, the president from Mars. who I'm sure she gets along with quite well, because they're both from the same part of the galaxy. Freak. She's a freak. So unless he apologizes... Well, he's already apologized publicly, as I covered in the last story, but he has declined to do so in a formal manner. So he's not yet... He wimped out because he apologized within 5 minutes of speaking the truth. Anyone who apologizes for speaking the truth will never get my vote again. How this guy... They're saying now he's raised a couple of $1 million in the last few days since this happened. How is it that the people of South Carolina want to keep giving money to a man who apologizes for speaking the truth? Is that how far we've fallen? That a wimp like this, just because he hasn't totally wimped out and kissed Nancy Pelosi's boots on the floor, they're willing to send this guy money? If this is the best we've got for conservatism, surely the end is near. It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm Doug McBurney. That's a scary thought. Can you imagine Nancy Pelosi running the country? I mean, if Joe Wilson's all we've got, folks, it's just a matter of time before Pelosi is handed the reins of power. That's terrifying. It's terrifying to think about. So let's move on to some news that's... Well, I don't know if you could call it good news, but at least it's not news that makes you want to jump on a boat or a plane and just get out of here, get off the planet. From the Associated Press, the Census Bureau this past week publicly severed its ties with ACORN, a community organization that has been hit with Republican accusations of voter fraud, amongst other things. Let's see. ACORN, which stands for the Association of Community Organizations for Reform Now, that's ACORN, they are a group which, according to the AP, they are a group which advocates for poor people. Now, if you've listened to the show for any amount of time, you know that I often get upset with Associated Press reporters for using the word allegedly, in cases when it's very obvious that what they're talking about is not alleged in any way. It has actually occurred. Well, here is a place where I think the Associated Press should have interjected the word allegedly. ACORN advocates for poor people. I would say ACORN allegedly advocates for poor people. But then again, I did not go to journalism school, so perhaps I'm missing something. Let's see. ACORN, you'll remember if you've paid attention to the news this week, they fired two employees who were seen on hidden camera giving tax advice, look how the AP puts this, giving tax advice to a man posing as a pimp and a woman who pretended to be a prostitute. They weren't giving tax advice, they were giving tax evasion advice. I mean, the Associated Press. I mean, ACORN gets busted basically helping a pimp smuggle in underage girls from Guatemala or something. And the AP still can't see, they just cannot bear to speak the truth about ACORN. Let's see what happened. In a statement, ACORN's Maryland, a board member from ACORN, said the video was an attempt to smear ACORN. Yeah, it was. You know, it was like Lila Rose. Have you guys heard of Lila Rose? She's a young lady who sneaks into Planned Parenthood with undercover cameras, and she smears them by exposing what they actually do on a day-to-day basis. That's what Lila Rose does. She smears Planned Parenthood with their own actions. And that's exactly what Breitbart and his boys over there did to ACORN. They just caught ACORN. They just filmed them doing what they do every day. And when that gets out, that's a smear. There's no doubt about it. Anyway, an interesting thing about Acorn. Now, I told you earlier in the broadcast that my extremely attractive audio engineer is from another land. So English is not her first language, okay? So a lot of times she hears the news, but unless she really gets into the story, it's kind of just background static, and she doesn't pay 100% attention. So when I told her that this story had broke, she confessed to me that until then, she thought Acorn was a rapper. She thought Acorn was a hip-hop star. Yeah, and it makes sense. Because every time she heard the name Acorn and she looked at the TV, there was always some black folks on camera, you know, dressed up like, you know, like all that. And, you know, 50 Cent, Jay-Z, Acorn. I mean, it could work, right? It's not unreasonable for her to have thought Acorn was a rapper. Yeah, and I told her, no, honey, that Acorn's not a rapper. They were going to be involved in the census, in next year's census. What's that? Oh, yeah, the 50 census. Oh, yeah. Okay, well, apparently Acorn will not be conducting the 50 census next year, thanks to Andy Breitbart and his boys. They did a great job. And we want to thank, I don't want to thank anyone else. It's just good news that Acorn is not going to be counting. I don't know. You know, now that they're off that, maybe they will form a rap group. They might actually become hip-hop artists now that they've lost their day jobs. All right, let's move on here. Now, this story, I'm not sure why I grabbed this story. I'm not even sure what I'm going to say about it, but I grabbed it because the headline had the word pagan in it, and I always like to talk about pagans because I am not a pagan. And I think that anyone who is a pagan is a complete fool and someone who is willfully ignorant and in denial about the nature of life, the universe, and everything. Let's see. This is Stoutenburg, Pennsylvania, from the Associated Press. The Reading Pagans and Witches booked a park in this small town for their festival called the Celebrating Earth Spirituality Festival. It's a day-long Saturday event that's supposed to feature music, prayers, storytelling, and discussion. There will be games, coloring, and face painting for the kids at this pagan festival. The president of the group, which is the Reading Pagans and Witches, the president, Jan Anderson Wenger, something like that, said organizers had merely planned a day for people of similar faiths to get together. He says members do not try to convert others. Did I say he? It's she. I'm sorry. She had one of these ambiguous names. Anyway, she says, if your path leads you to a just and moral life, it is the right path for you. And who are we to tell you what that path is for you? As if morality and right can be different for different people. I mean, I can understand that when you're choosing ice cream flavors. I mean, there's no right or wrong answer. You know, you're picking the color of your new car. You know, we can agree to disagree. But when it comes to morality and right, there's only one path, and narrow is the way. Jan. Jen. Oh, maybe it's Jen. Anyway. Narrow is the way. There's only one right. There is only one truth. There's not different truths for everybody. You know, my truth might be hitting Jen over the head with a baseball bat. That could be my truth and morality. And I suppose she would be okay with it, because she certainly doesn't want to convert anyone to her path. And I suppose I'd be free to follow my path and bash her skull in. And if someone were to assert that wasn't right, I would say, well, who are you to judge my path? It was right for me. Anyway, these pagans, I'll tell you. Let's see. I don't want to do any more quotes from these idiots. Anyway, some Christians are planning, a dozen or so Christian groups and churches are trying to organize a wall of prayer around the village. Some youth minister guy says, quote, we're asking the Christians in the community to come out and make a circle around the entire facility and stand there for 1 hour and pray on behalf of the community and then go home. No signs, no shouting, no protests. Just a visible sign that we disapprove of the whole underlying theme, that being pagan religion. Well, good luck to this fellow. You know, what they don't need a wall of prayer and silence. They need a wall of witnessing to try to reach out to these ignorant, stupid pagans and save them from eternal damnation and separation from the creator of the universe, who controls the destiny of your very soul once it leaves your pathetic little body. Think about that for a moment. Here we are alive on this plane, but the moment our soul separates from our body, we have absolutely no control of what happens. We are at the mercy of the creator of the universe in which we have lived, and these pagans deny that on a daily basis to the world and to their children. By the way, they say they don't convert anybody. Well, what about their kids? Lying to them about the nature of life, the universe, and everything. Anyway, what the Christians need to do is form a ring around these ignorant, stupid pagans and preach the gospel to them. Teach them about truth. Teach them about right and wrong. Challenge them about their path to morality and right. But you know what? What is this? Some evangelical youth ministry, Crossfire Youth Ministries. My guess is that Crossfire Youth Ministries and their leader, James Horning, my guess is they're typical evangelicals and they're ill-equipped to compete in the field of ideas with even stupid, ignorant, dirt-worshipping pagans. Like most of the church, they've fallen into quite a state of disrepair. They know how to hold hands and pray and show their general disapproval. But when it comes to actually reaching out to these people with the truth, my guess is that it would be a dramatic failure. They'd be embarrassed by the pagans. With their own book, the Bible. I'll bet the pagans would embarrass these ignorant Christians who don't know what to do. It's just a shame. Okay, but there you have it. Pagans 1, Christians 0 in Stoutburg, Pennsylvania. All right, let's move on. That's kind of depressing. All right. Dateline Tallahassee, Florida. Abortion opponents want to put a proposal on next year's Florida ballot that would give human rights to embryos. Imagine that. Shocking. Now, can we look up embryo in the dictionary and find out the dictionary definition for an embryo? By the way, we don't want to give it to all embryos. We want to give it to human embryos only, okay? Just the human embryos. Now, the AP, they don't point that out, but it's very clear from the language. If we read on in the story from the Associated Press, the Virginia-based American Life League announced on September 11th a petition drive for the proposed personhood amendment has begun to amend the Florida Constitution. It would define a person as being just that, a person from, quote, the beginning of the biological development of that person, unquote. And Florida is one of several states being targeted by the personhood movement. All right, I like that. We're targeting states now. I dig it. I love it. It's like a military operation. Let's go get them. Anyway, I was trying to get to the dictionary on my computer here while I'm doing the show. And Internet Explorer, why did I open Internet Explorer? I want to hit myself in the head with a hammer for having opened Internet Explorer because let's just say it leaves a bit to be desired. Anyway, I was going to look up the definition of embryo, but Internet Explorer, perhaps it has failed me. I don't know. All right. Let's see. Voters, back to the AP story, while Internet Explorer does whatever it's going to do to my computer here. Okay. If the show ends suddenly, it means my computer has exploded. All right. Back to the story. Voters in Colorado, you'll remember, rejected a similar proposal last year, but another attempt is being made to get back on the ballot there next year. Efforts to get on the ballot failed in Georgia and Oregon last year. North Dakota lawmakers this year rejected a personhood bill. But folks, don't be discouraged. We had a wonderful AP write-up on our activities down in Pueblo, made the national wires. We've got an effort launching here in Florida, and California is going to submit language. Don't get discouraged, ladies and gentlemen. It took, how many years did it take us in the United States between the time the debate erupted over slavery and the personhood of the black man until slavery was actually abolished? It took a generation or more. And so we have just begun this battle. And it's like Keith Mason said in the AP write-up on our activities gathering signatures. He said, we are taking a stand and we will wait for the culture to change around us. Man, gives me gives me chills to think that that much wisdom exists in one young man in this nation anymore. It gives me some hope for the future. You know, I had talked about the fact that if we keep tolerating the bloodshed and the murder and the mayhem and the violence, that our country will surely fall. As sure as I stand here today, our nation will fall. But there is hope, and the only clear hope I can see is in the personhood movement. All right. The definition of an embryo. The young of a viviparous animal, especially of a mammal, in the early stages of development within the womb. In humans, up to the end of the second month. So an embryo, now they call it a human here, and if it's an animal, they call it an animal. If it's a mammal, they call it a mammal. It's not like it starts out as a fish or a blob or a tumor, and then at some point becomes an animal, a mammal, a human. So a person is a person, no matter how small. And if you don't realize that, you hate God, and he is going to kill you for it. He is going to kill you for it. Okay, let's move on. That was good news, but I'm a little bit upset. I apologize. Rodney King, do I want to do that? Let's do this. Fallen degenerate Ellen DeGeneres has been apparently appointed to be a judge on American Idol. She was picked to replace Paula Abdul. Now, Paula Abdul is a freak in her own right, but as far as I know, at least she's a normal girl in that sense of the word that you guys would understand, at least from what I know. I mean, Paula's taken a lot of drugs, and her mind is, you know, probably less than it once was, but at least she's not as bad as Fallen Degenerate. And anyway, what does Ms. Degenerate have to say? She says, hopefully I'm the people's point of view because I'm just like you. If you're a Butch Dyke, I'm just like you. No, Ellen, you're not like 98% of the population. You're a queer, for crying out loud. How could you possibly speak for us? Let's see. Okay, anything else from here? Paula Abdul has yet to announce a steady job to replace her role on the Fox singing contest, but she told TV Guide last week that she'd like to host a talk show. That's great. Oh, man, anybody can host a talk show. I suppose I'm the same way. Isn't there a Republican deviant creep who's going to host a talk show? I can't even remember his name. But let's see. Fallen Degenerate Ellen DeGeneres will join the ninth season of American Idol. She's had her own show for the past 6 years. Anyway, this is just an example of how warped the sensibilities of our nation have become in just one generation. I mean, if you just go back 40 years, number one, you couldn't have had a show about stars, picking stars, and you couldn't have called them idols because it would have offended too many people's sensibilities to have the word idol in the title of a show. I mean, they used to have Star Search and things like that. Now it's American Idol. It's full on hedonism. I mean, and I'm not even trying to disguise it. Not even paying lip service to our Christian heritage anymore. The show is about idolatry, and we'll put it right in the title, and it won't offend anyone. And you certainly wouldn't have had a clipped-haired Butch Dyke hosting the show and being a judge. It simply wouldn't have played merely a generation ago. But as we've learned from Scripture, it only takes one generation for an entire culture that has taken hundreds or even thousands of years to develop to completely fall apart. She's got the jack.
Play it, Angus.
I love the interview they did with Angus Young. When they asked Angus, how do you feel about playing the same song for 17 albums in a row? And Angus said, you're wrong. It's 18 albums. All right. We're back. Anyway, you can have a good time on Google trying to figure out what they were talking about there when they said she's got the jack. But anyway, very appropriate for a story about Fallen Degenerate. Ellen DeGeneres. All right. Back into the culture file as we round third and head for home here at the Weekly Worldview. From Seattle, Washington, 11 people have used prescribed drugs to end their lives during the first 6 months after a Washington state law took effect, allowing assisted suicide for terminally ill patients. Another 5 people received life-ending drugs under the law but died without using them, for whatever that's worth. The group Compassion and Choices of Washington is the assisted suicide advocate, and I think that's why I pulled this story. The name of the group is Compassion and Choices, and they support and advocate suicide. It's a death cult, and they're called Compassion and Choices. George Orwell would have been proud. And I think that's all I've got to say about that story. Let's just move on here into the culture file. Dateline Geneva, which for all of you public school educators is located somewhere north of Detroit and somewhere east of New York City. The United States has lost its place as the world's most competitive economy, according to a survey released there in Geneva last week. A poll of over 13,000 business leaders conducted by the Geneva-based World Economic Forum reports that Switzerland has overtaken the United States, and the United States is now second. Singapore is ranked third, and let's see, who rounds out the top five? Sweden maintained its rank as fourth. Wait a minute. Sweden and Switzerland are in the top five, and the survey is based out of Geneva? Excuse me. I mean, who wants to live in Sweden or Switzerland? Anyway, I think they may be a little bit biased. Let's see. Sweden maintained its fourth rank. Denmark slipped 2 ranks to fifth. And they were followed by Finland, Germany, Japan, Canada, and the Netherlands. Okay. For whatever this is worth, I couldn't live in any one of these dumps. I mean, I've lived in Japan. I'd never want to do that again. Germany, I don't think so. It's landlocked. Finland, too cold. Canada, too cold. Too many homos. The Netherlands, I don't know enough about the Netherlands, but I don't think I'd want to live there. Probably too cold. Sweden, too cold. Switzerland, too cold. So, at least in my economy, the United States is still number one, at least as far as where I want to live. But that could change. I might be willing to move to a country where I would freeze if this place gets any more bizarro. All right. Back into the international file. Dateline, the UN. The dateline is UN, UN, as if the dateline were not. It's UN. Anyway, in a radical report, the UN Conference on Trade and Development, called UNCTAD, it sounds like something that they'd find growing on your colon, and they'd have to remove it with some kind of laser. Sir, we're sorry, but you have an UNCTAD. That's going to have to come off. This is going to be pretty uncomfortable. Anyway, the UNCTAD has said the system of currencies and capital rules which binds the world economy is not working properly and was largely responsible for the financial and economic crises. And so they want to replace the dollar with a new global currency. How about this? How about replace the current zeitgeist with something a little more simple like you shall not steal? That is why we're in the current economic crisis. Too many people violating you shall not steal. Mostly governing officials. That's the problem. We don't need a new currency. We need a new morality, which is the old morality, which is original thought. Ideas like You shall not steal. You shall not murder. You shall not lie. You shall not commit adultery. How about just those four, and then we can keep the dollar? For crying out loud. The UNCTAD. Give me a break. I don't think I want to do anything more on that story either. I just don't care enough. Here we go. Barry Ho at his best. Dateline, this is from ABC. The U.S., us, has shifted its policy, saying it is now willing to meet one-on-one with North Korea, if that is helpful, to bring Pyongyang back to the nuclear negotiating table. So if you've been following the story, ladies and gentlemen, the North Koreans have bamboozled the moronic leaders of the Western democracies into forming these, and China, into forming these six-party talks so that they can try to... I love the way they put this in the story. These six-party talks have been going on, and ABC calls them negotiations to rid Pyongyang of its nuclear program. As if the nuclear program has somehow attached itself to the government there in Pyongyang, and they just need help ridding themselves of it. It's not that the North Koreans want to build nuclear bombs and blow things up. It's just that this nuclear program has somehow attached itself to them, and we need to help them rid themselves of it. I'm telling you, folks, it's 1984. George Orwell could have made this stuff up. It's unbelievable. Anyway, the United States had steadfastly said they would not negotiate one-on-one, but Barry Ho has capitulated. He will negotiate with Korea one-on-one. And these negotiations are just to get Pyongyang back to the other negotiations to try to rid them of that pesky nuclear program. Unbelievable. We're being led by children and fools and aliens and people from an Orwell novel, for crying out loud. Dateline Venice from the Reuters Wire. Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez said this past week he hoped to be able to work more closely with President Barry Ho, Barack Obama. And I'm sure Barry feels the same way. In fact, some of Obama's departing employees, some of the Acorn employees, are probably going to go work for Chavez. Now, Chavez was in Venice for the world premiere of South of the Border, a movie by director Oliver Stone that's a sympathetic portrait of Hugo Chavez himself. I could care less. I'm just embarrassed for our country that Barry Ho... Oh, and then there's the secret weapon test. I didn't get to this story. Apparently, while Benjamin Netanyahu was in Russia, the Israelis were testing a secret weapon that will be used against Iran. I can't wait. I'm on the edge of my seat. I want to know what the secret weapon is. But I want to close with a story that is of utmost importance. From Uttaradit, Thailand, a Thai man is keeping more than 4,000 scorpions as pets to atone for the years he spent cooking them and selling them as snacks. Yes, after years of serving up scorpions, Swang Pwangrisi, a practicing Buddhist, felt it was time to befriend the scorpions instead. He says, "Although I was happy to have money, I felt suffering deep inside as they were being harmed by me. I felt scared that I was committing a sin by cooking and selling the scorpions as snacks." Well, I don't know if it's a sin. It might be a sin to sell people scorpions as a snack. Well, it's not a sin. I suppose when you grow up in Thailand, I suppose you'll even eat scorpions. I mean, at times they get pretty hungry over there. Anyway, Swang, he buys up to 1 kilogram of live cicadas and other insects daily to feed his pet scorpions, who have stung him so many times that he says he is now immune to their venom. Yeah. He also spends at least 1 hour every day meditating inside the enclosure where they live, often placing scorpions in his mouth. He now makes a living by selling figurines and stone carvings of ants, frogs, turtles, and Buddhas to other ignorant pagans right there in Uttaradit, Thailand. Yeah. Although he says he used to earn almost $600 a month, or no, I'm sorry, he now earns just $600 a month, and he used to earn about $900 a month selling cooked scorpions. He says him and his family are now content. So he's found his path, he's found his truth, and in the next life, He will be judged by the same creator of the universe as you and I, ladies and gentlemen. And we'll see how we all make out. That's it. We're done. I want to thank Personhood USA, Colorado Right to Life, American Right to Life, KGOV Radio, Denver Bible Church, Theology Online, and my other brother Daryl for making it all happen. Here at the Worldview Studios, I'll be back with you next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.